Matthew chapter 28, I'm going to pick up in our remarks about verse 9, but I want to begin reading at verse 1 to read down for the sake of context. We looked at these verses last Wednesday evening, verse 1 through verse 8 of Matthew 28, and in connection with them, we also went and looked at Mark's account and Luke's account and some in John. Did that because I wanted you to see that there's significant difference in some of the accounts that are given. If you were seeking to try to do a harmony of the Gospels in regard to this section of text, it would be very hard to do because so many differences, and you got to try to figure out, well, how was that? How did it come about that each one of the Gospel writers presents almost a different picture? And so it's hard to harmonize some of it. Let's just read this and bring two or three things up, and then we'll move on in our context. Now after the Sabbath, as the first day of the week began to dawn, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary came to see the tomb. And behold, there was a great earthquake, for an angel of the Lord descended from heaven and came and rolled back the stone from the door and sat on it. His countenance was like lightning, and his clothing as white as snow. And the guards shook for fear of him and became like dead men. But the angel answered and said to the women, "Do not be afraid, for I know that you seek Jesus who was crucified. He is not here, for he is risen. As he said, come, see the place where the Lord lay. And go quickly and tell his disciples that he is risen from the dead, and indeed he is going before you into Galilee. There you will see him. Behold, I have told you." So they departed quickly from the tomb with fear and great joy and ran to bring his disciples word. I believe we ended there. But I just want to remind you of some of the things we saw last week. It says, after the Sabbath, that is, after Saturday, on the first day of the week, as the day of the week began to dawn here in Matthew 28 and verse 1. So as the first day of the week began to dawn, that is, as it began to appear to become light. Well, Luke's account of Mark says it was very early in the morning, on that morning. And then Mark goes on to say that they had come to the tomb when the sun had already risen. And then when we looked at John's account, they, of course, come on the first day of the week. And Mary Magdalene is said to have come to the tomb while it was still dark and found the stone rolled away. We looked at those accounts to see the difference in that. And as I said, when you try to harmonize all of that together, how is it that one gospel writer says, well, it was still dark? Other gospel writer says, no, the day was dawning. Other gospel writer says, no, the sun had already risen. Well, I suggested last week that evidently they began their journey when it was dark. And as they journeyed, we don't know how far they had to travel, as they journeyed, the sun began to rise. It began to dawn. It began to be daylight. And so by the time they got to the tomb, it was already daylight. The sun had risen. And that's kind of easy to harmonize in that regard, if that is in fact what took place. But then we come to some other things that are said in these different accounts. For example, Mary Magdalene and the others, the other women, the other Mary, chapter 28 and verse 1. Of course, we go back in the context, and that other Mary is the mother of James and Joseph. That's the Marys that are under consideration. But there were also other women who came to the tomb as well. Salome, the mother of Zebedee's sons, Matthew 27, verse 56. And Mark 16 and verse 1 indicates that she was with them as well. But there was also a woman by the name of Joanna, in Luke's account, who was the wife of Cusa, Herod Antipas' steward, Luke 24 and in verse 10, identified as Herod Antipas' steward, and Luke 8 in verse 3. So there was at least four women, not just Mary Magdalene. But in our account here in Matthew chapter 28, we're going to see in verse 9 and 10 that it seems as though that Jesus appeared to all the women, at least all four that are mentioned in the gospel accounts. There may have been others that were not named. But he appeared to all the women on this occasion. But then we read, for example, in Mark 16 and verse 9, that he appeared first to Mary Magdalene. And so when you try to harmonize these, when it was Mary Magdalene that mentioned in the other gospel accounts as the only woman that saw him, and we come to this account and it seems as all the women saw him. For example, read verse 9 and 10 with me in Matthew 28. And as they went to tell his disciples, and that they under consideration are those who came to the tomb early on the first day of the week, especially those two in verse 1, but the other women that we know of that are mentioned in the other gospel accounts, that's the they under consideration. So as they went to tell his disciples, behold, Jesus met them, not just Mary Magdalene, but them, saying, rejoice. And they came and held him by the feet and worshipped him. Then Jesus said to them, do not be afraid, go and tell my brethren and go to the Galilee, and there will I see, they will see me. So it appears that he appeared to all the women. And so I bring those things up because it's just hard to harmonize. When you look at all of these accounts together, it's hard to harmonize, but they're all presented from a different perspective by the different gospel writers. And of course, they're all true. They're all in harmony with the will of God. And none is saying something that is out of line with what took place. It's all true, just presented from a different perspective. And so if you try to harmonize all of them, it's going to be hard to do, but it's possible to come up with as at least a clear understanding as you possibly can from it. And that's one of the reasons I read in the other gospel accounts in regard to that. Let's just pick up now at Matthew 28 and in verse 9, where it seems as though he has appeared to all of these women. He met them, saying, rejoice, and they came and held him by the feet and worshipped him. They came and held him by the feet. Now, why would they do that? Why would they hold him by the feet? They subjected themselves to him. During this particular period of time, one showed reverence and homage to the one being worshipped by falling at his feet. As a matter of fact, we see this on several different occasions in different places. In Acts chapter 10, when Peter came to the household of Cornelius, Cornelius fell at Peter's feet. And of course, for that particular reason, but Peter, of course, corrected him. He wasn't deity. He wasn't the one to be receiving reverence or worship. But on this occasion, that's what's under consideration here. They came and held him by the feet. They fell at his feet. That's what they did. They bowed themselves at his feet in submission to him. They recognize him as one who is to be revered and one who is to be worshipped. And that's what's under consideration, as it goes on to say, and worshipped him, showed homage to him. Now, when we look at the other gospel accounts, we'll not take time to go and read. We'll finish this chapter tonight. But when we look at the other gospel accounts, it doesn't indicate this. It indicates that only Mary saw him. And, of course, what is said in verse 10 is said to Mary in the other gospel accounts. And so we wonder, if we try to harmonize them, how that was so, because Mary goes and tells them, actually all of them went to tell, because that's the instructions to all of them in verse 10. Then Jesus said to them, do not be afraid. And, of course, they would be afraid, because here they see Jesus, whom they know died on the cross. And remember, they were there present when his body was prepared for burial, and they watched it being laid in the tomb. And here he is now. alive. Do not be afraid. So anyone would be afraid of someone who was dead but now has come back to life. Go and tell my brethren to go to Galilee, and there they will see me. Go to Galilee. Well, he's going to go to Galilee. The other gospel accounts, one of them, I forget exactly which one, Jesus had evidently designated a place that evidently they went often, or at least on this occasion, they would see him. One of the other gospel accounts says it was a mountain. What mountain, of course, in the region of Galilee, we simply do not know. But it could have been some place that he had designated beforehand, because he had prophesied of his death on several occasions, and not only his death, but his resurrection as well. When we go back in our study of Matthew, in Matthew 16, and in verse 21, after Peter had made his confession, Matthew 16, and in verse 21, from that time Jesus began to show to his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem, suffer many things from the elders and chief priests, and be killed and be raised again the third day. He made that same prophecy in chapter 17 and verse 23, chapter 20 and verse 19, that he was going to be put to death, but he was going to be raised from the dead the third day. And of course that was brought up, remember, during his trial as well, in Matthew 26 and in verse 61. And also mentioned in order to get a guard on the tomb in the previous chapter, Matthew 27, verse 40 and verse 63, where it is mentioned as well, in order to place a guard on the tomb, that he was going to rise again the third day. So he had predicted his resurrection. And since he had predicted his resurrection, it would only make sense that he would appoint a place that they might see him after his resurrection. And when we read the other gospel accounts, of course, we see that he appears to many at different times. Many at different times. I guess John's account presents the most appearances of him appearing to some. A lengthy account of him appearing to two on the road to Emmaus, and them not recognizing him, not knowing who he was, until he revealed himself over a meal with them and then disappeared from their sight. And then these two individuals, Cleopas was one, they traveled back to the city of Jerusalem to tell the apostles, and of course they didn't believe it. But they had traveled to Emmaus, which was about 7 miles from the city of Jerusalem. That means probably took them a few hours to travel that, if they were walking, and most likely they were. They had traveled to Emmaus with Jesus, turned around and went back to the city of Jerusalem to tell his other disciples that he had risen from the dead and that they had seen him. Other gospel accounts, Luke and Mark mentions other appearances, but Paul mentions several appearances in 1 Corinthians 15, remember. On one occasion, he was seen by over 500 brethren at once. Does anybody remember how many days it was that Jesus, from the time of his resurrection to the time that he ascended, he was with the brethren? 40 days. Luke tells us that in his gospel account, for 40 days. So from the time that he was resurrected until the time that he ascended, there was 40 days. A lot of time for him to be seen by many during this particular period of time. And so in verse 11 of Matthew 28, now while they were going, behold, some of the guard. So the picture changes now from the women seeing him after his resurrection to the guards now, who've got to come up with some kind of story to prove that he didn't arise from the dead. Before I go on with that, I had mentioned the differences in the different gospel accounts, but when we look at them, there's four things mentioned in all four gospel accounts. The empty tomb, the announcement of the angels that he is risen, the appearance to the women, and then his appearance to the other disciples. All four of those things. So even if you try to harmonize everything it said, you'll still come up with those four things that happen. Verse 11 again, "Now while they were going," that is while the women was going to tell the disciples that they had seen the resurrected Lord, "behold, some of the guard came into the city and reported to the chief priests all the things that had happened." Some of the guard, the word some there is in the plural in the Greek. Some of the guard of course is the men who were given by Pilate to guard the tomb, the Roman soldiers. Some, how many, we do not know. They came into the city. There's that phrase, the city. Most oftentimes when you see the phrase the city in the New Testament, that's reference to the city of Jerusalem. Even though the city is not mentioned here, by implication, we could go back in the context and see that is the city of Jerusalem under consideration. "So while they were going, some of the guard came into the city and reported to the chief priest." Reported to the chief priest, that is members of the Sanhedrin Council. The chief priest, the ones who had gone to members of the Sanhedrin Council, who had gone to Pilate and requested a guard. Remember, they didn't use the police from the temple. They didn't use those Levites who could have guarded the tomb. They actually used Roman soldiers. And of course, Pilate had given his authority and had no doubt had the tomb sealed with his seal. And these Roman soldiers are under the oversight, evidently though, of not of Pilate on this occasion, but they're under the oversight of the Sanhedrin Council. They're under oversight of those men who put them in that position, who posted them. And so they come to these members of the Sanhedrin Council, the chief priest here, and report all the things that has happened. "And when they had assembled with the elders," when who had assembled with the elders? Well, when the chief priest assembled with the elders. So we have the chief priest, and then they assembled with the elders. The elders are also part of the Sanhedrin Council. So the chief priests get with the elders. They, you might say, come together as a council again to consider what has taken place. "And when they had assembled with the elders and taken counsel," that is when they consulted together. They had to come up with some way of saying, no, Jesus has not really risen from the dead. Because remember now, this was something that he said he was going to do. Again, at the trial that was brought up, with Pilate it was brought up. Evidently, it was something that was commonly known that he was going to rise the third day. Not only was it known by them, but it was known by the people. So they can't have him fulfilling the prophecy that he made, that he would arise from the dead the third day. But that's in fact what happened. But they've got to come up with some other answer to why the tomb is empty. "So they gave a large sum of money to the soldiers, saying, tell them his disciples came at night and stole him away while he slept." They gave a large sum of money. Money here is a term in the Greek. It simply refers to silver money. How much money was given, we simply do not know, but it was a large sum. No doubt there was more than two soldiers. There was perhaps two soldiers at the particular period of time when Jesus arose from the dead, but they probably had to pay off the whole guard. I mean, all of them who made up the guard. How many that was, we simply do not know. But the Sanhedrin Council came up with a large sum of money in order to pay them off so they would lie. "His disciples came at night and stole him away while he slept." Verse 13 of Matthew 28, "saying, tell them his disciples came at night and stole him away while he slept. And if this comes to the governor's ears," if this comes to Pilate's ears, if Pilate hears about this, because these soldiers that would be severely punished they could possibly have been put to death. But if this comes to the governor's ears, we will appease him and make you secure. That is, keep you safe. We will appease him. Now, how would they appease him? Well, just like they had appeased those soldiers, they would pay them off. No doubt, Pilate would say, well, what sum of money are you planning on giving me if I keep this quiet? How am I going to allow these soldiers to get away with allowing his disciples to come and take the body of Jesus? So they would appease him. They would pay him off just like they paid the soldiers off. Kind of reminds me of politicians today. Easy to be bought, especially when they have no character, have no morals about them. Verse 15, so they took the money and did as they were instructed. What else were they to do? But take the money and did as they were instructed. But if anyone was going to believe in the resurrection of Christ, it seems like these individuals would have. They were ones who were guarding a dead man. Go back in the context. Go back in the context in verse 4. Note the irony in this. Matthew 28 in verse 4. And the guards shook for fear of him and became like dead men. They were men who were very much alive guarding a dead man. But when this takes place, they become as though they're dead. The irony. So they took the money and did as they were instructed. And this saying is commonly reported among the Jews until this day. Until this day has reference to the time of the writing of this gospel account. Whenever that was. Perhaps in the 50s, I think we said, sometime. And so for that length of time, it was commonly reported among the Jews until this day. And believe it or not, some Jewish historians still wrote in the first and second century that was commonly reported, that Jesus' body was actually stolen by his disciples. Actually stolen. And how was it? And here's an interesting thing here as well. In regard to his body being stolen, the word stolen in our context in verse 13, tell them his disciples came at night and stole him away while we slept. The word stole there is the word that is connected with that word translated thief. Remember the thief that steals by stealth? Same word family. So the disciples came and stole him away by stealth, stole him away while they slept, secretly. They didn't do harm to the guards. They just secretly slipped in and stole him away while they slept. Of course, they would not have been asleep. If they had, they would have been severely punished if, in fact, they had been asleep. It's almost amazing why they would even go, knowing what was possible, the possibility of happening to them, why they would even go and report that he had been raised from the dead or his body was missing, knowing that they might have been put to death or severely punished for allowing his body to be removed from the tomb. But nonetheless, they do. So they took the money, again, verse 15, and did as they were instructed. And this saying is commonly reported among the Jews until this day. Mark 16 and verse 11, and when they heard that he was alive and had been seen by her, that is by Mary Magdalene, they did not believe. Mark 16 and verse 12. After that, he appeared in another form to two of them as they walked and went into the country. And when they went and told it to the rest, but they did not believe them either. Afterwards, he appeared to the 11 as they sat at the table, and he rebuked their unbelief and hardness of heart because they did not believe those who had seen him after he had risen. So three times, verse 11 through verse 14, they did not believe. They did not believe the eyewitness testimony of those who had seen the resurrected Lord. They did not believe. Well, it would be hard to believe. It would be hard to believe, but it was exactly the way Jesus said it was going to be. Every step of the way, prophecy was fulfilled. He was to go to Jerusalem, be betrayed into the hands of the Gentiles, be crucified and put to death, and rise again the third day. Seems like they would have put all of that together and would not have disbelieved the eyewitness testimony, but nonetheless they did. They did not believe. And so, verse 16 of Matthew 28, and then the 11 disciples went away into Galilee to the mountain which Jesus had appointed for them. And when they saw him, they worshipped him, but some doubted. But some doubted. Yep, some did doubt. Remember John 21, John's account, there was one who we often refer to as a doubter. Remember who that is? Thomas. That's right. Jesus appeared to the 11 minus Thomas on one occasion while Thomas was not there. And Thomas said, unless I see his hands and his feet and put my hand into the side, I will not believe. And Jesus appeared to them. And he said, my Lord and my God. So yes, some doubted. They all doubted to begin with. They all simply did not believe. Verse 18 of Matthew 28. Then Jesus came and spoke to them, saying, now, we see that this occasion, 40 days here, has taken place. Each one of the gospel accounts, John gives the longest one, but each one of the gospel accounts is very short from the time that he arose from the dead to the time that the Great Commission is given. That 40 days is covered very quickly in a few brief verses as we see it, having been covered here in a few brief verses. And now the 40 days has come to its end, and it's time for him to ascend to his Father's right hand. Verse 18 again. Then Jesus came and spoke to them, saying, all authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. All authority. Authority, power, right. It is the power and right to govern. And all authority has been given to him. All. That is complete authority. Absolute authority. The word all here is used not only in verse 18, but we see it all nations again in verse 19. And observe all things that I command you in verse 20. And then again in verse 20, always, even to the end of the age, always there is literally all of the days. All of the days. Young's literal translation rendered it literally that way. All of the days. So you have the word all here used four times in verse 18 through verse 20. Absolute. The totality of something. All authority, complete authority, the totality of authority, whole authority, and then all nations, the totality of all people, Jews and Gentiles, and then all things that I commanded you. That is the totality of everything that he had commanded, and then all the days. So all authority has been given to me, not only in heaven, but also on earth. And since he has all authority, he has the right then to command. And so he commands them to go, just as given in Mark 16, verse 15 to 16. Go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. Here, go therefore. Some versions say, therefore go. Therefore is connected to the previous verse. Since all authority has been given to him, therefore go. Go therefore and make disciples of all the nations. Make disciples. How do you make a disciple? Sometimes we define the word disciple simply as a learner, but a disciple is more than a learner. A disciple is actually one who learns, but he becomes an adherent to that which he is learning. That is, the doctrine and teaching that is being taught, he makes it a part of his own life. That is, the doctrine becomes his, and then the obedience to the doctrine becomes his life. He makes himself like the teacher. So go therefore and make disciples. Disciple them. They become Christians is what they become. Go therefore and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them, immersing them, submerging them in the name of the Father and of the Son and the Holy Spirit, in the name. If you have a pencil or pen, you might want to note that word, little word in there. It's actually the Greek preposition into, ace. So they're being baptized into. They're being baptized into a relationship. It says into the name. The word name here is used by metonymy. It's put for the person. So they're baptized into the Father. They're baptized into the Son. And they're baptized into the Holy Spirit. That is, they come into a relationship with the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit. That's why we're able to call upon God as our Father. Because we're baptized into a relationship with Him. Before, we were not children of God, but now we are children of God because now we're in a relationship with Him and He is our Father. So we're baptized into that relationship. Baptized into the name of the Father and Son of the Holy Spirit. Then he says, teaching them, that is, teaching those who become disciples, teaching those who become Christians, teaching them to observe all things, that is, the totality of the things that I have commanded you. So that which the apostles were commanded, we're also commanded. Here's the inference of the Great Commission. One will say, well, that Great Commission was given to the apostles. It's not given to us. Yes, it is given to us. If the apostles were to teach us to observe, and the word observe here means to keep, obey, teaching them to observe, to keep, obey all things I've commanded you. So if they were commanded to go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature, and they're to teach us to keep all the commandments, obey all the commandments, then we're to go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. We're to disciple just as well as they were to disciple, teaching them to observe all things that I have commanded you. And lo, or we might add the word behold, because that's what the Greek word means. Lo, or behold. Or just lo and behold. Sometimes we use that in the English. The word is used here to bring attention to the very next statement that is made. And lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age. Now, we just read over that very quickly, but I want you to note that. And lo, or behold, I am. He declares himself to be deity by that phrase, I am. It's the phrase we saw on Sunday morning in our study of the Gospel of John. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God. Same phrase in John 8:24. If you do not believe that I am, you shall die in your sins. So he says here, I am with you always, that is all the days, even to the end of the age. I am with you always. And that reminds me of a statement in Hebrews Hebrews 13 and verse 5. I will never leave you nor forsake you. Remember, we mentioned that in regard to the words that Jesus cried out on the cross. My God, why have you forsaken me? Quote from Psalm 122, verse 1. So, I am with you always, even to the end of the age. Can we put our faith and confidence in that? I am with you always to the end of the age. God says, I will never leave you nor forsake you. We can put trust and confidence in that because the Lord is always with us as long as we're in a relationship with Him. He doesn't mean He's always physically present with us because He's in heaven at the right hand of God. We're on earth, so He's not always physically present with us, but He is with us. He is in our midst when we come together to worship Him every first day of the week. He is in our midst this very evening. He is here. Also reminds me of Acts 18 and in verse 10. In Acts 18 and in verse 10, where the Lord said to the Apostle Paul when he's in Corinth, pick up in verse 8 of Acts 18, then Crispus, the ruler of the synagogue, believed on the Lord with all of his household. Many of the Corinthians hearing believed and were baptized. Now the Lord spoke to Paul in the night by a vision. Do not be afraid, but speak, and do not keep silent. For I am with you, and no one will attack you to hurt you, for I have many people in this city. For I am with you. Now, was the Lord there physically present with him? No. The Lord was still at the right hand of God in heaven, but he was with Paul. And the same thing is said on more than one occasion. The Lord is with us. He's in fellowship with us. And as long as we're in fellowship with him, he is with us. All right. We're out of time, and we've ended our study of Matthew. Does someone have questions or comments? Thank you very much for your kind attention this evening.